This is JCU Conversations, a podcast show from James Cook University, Singapore. Tune in as we ask experts in the industry more about their lives and their approach to success. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Let's listen to today's episode.
Hi, I'm Lucy Tan, Associate Professor in Clinical Psychology from James Cook University, Singapore. My guest today is Dr. Melvin Heng, Executive Director and Group Chief Executive Officer at Thompson Medical. Dr. Heng brings to the table a unique blend of medical expertise, executive leadership, and entrepreneurship. With well over a decade of experience in diverse areas such as hospital management, primary and specialist clinics, teleradiography, medtech, and aeromedical evacuations. Before stepping into corporate leadership, Dr. Heng was a medical doctor in UK and Singapore. Beyond the traditional medical trajectory, his career has seen some notable highlights. For instance, he is co-founder of an aeromedical evacuation company and was also an equity partner at a chain of primary care health clinics. Today, Dr. Heng also leverages his expertise as a medical advisor and investor in multiple medtech companies. Welcome, Dr. Heng.
And
hi. Thank you so much for
Thanks, Lucy.
Yeah.
Pleasure.
So JCU Conversations is a very casual chit-chat.
Okay.
So it's basically about engaging with our industry partners. We converse about your success and your achievements. And wow, you know, what a wealth of experience. So how about you introduce yourself and tell the audience a bit more about your role in Thompson Medical?
So yeah, thanks so much, Lucy, and to JCU for the opportunity, and hi to all that are watching. Currently in Thompson Medical, I'm Group CEO, so I oversee the entire operations in Singapore, Malaysia, and recently Vietnam, as we have just acquired a hospital there and a couple of clinics there as well. So that involves the day-to-day running of the hospitals. We have a fleet of IVF fertility clinics as well. And, you know, we are currently on the pathway to disrupting ourselves digitally by building more digital infrastructure for process improvement, for improvement of the hospital and, you know, patient journey. So there's quite a lot of parts that are moving. And I think my role involves splitting myself into an operator, a strategic leader, sometimes a coach, many times even dealing with the local politics, because healthcare does, you know, touch on the fabric of society quite a bit. And in any healthcare organization within a country, there's a lot of community impact and, you know, a lot of dialogue with regulators and the ministry on, you know, how they want to bring healthcare in their own countries. So there's a mix of both. And lastly, last but not least, is a stakeholder management of my physicians, which are one of our key, you know, operators of the hospitals and you know, main support that we have to bring the type of healthcare that we want to our patients.
It sounds really complex, isn't it? All those challenges with
Yeah, I didn't expect it to be that way. It seems like I have a knack for choosing complexity. I think I chose to be a doctor because I thought previously I wanted to be an aeronautics engineer. I thought that was the most complicated part of engineering, and then I chose medicine because I thought, you know, healthcare, you know, the human body is even more complex, and then I end up in healthcare management, which it is complex in many ways, and I think as we talk more, some color will come out on why I think so.
So, you know, you have having to train as a medical doctor, and you've practiced medicine for a while, and then navigated and transitioned across to management and executive management of quite a large healthcare hospital and clinics. How did you manage those challenges?
I think you manage by going back to first principles. I think I had the luxury, or maybe the way things serendipitously panned out for me, was that when I first started leaving clinical practice, you know, the work that I was doing and the management scope and size was more bite-sized. You know, I started off with a small outfit, you know, based in Singapore and Sri Lanka. We were running aeromedical evacuations for patients, you know, well and unwell patients across the region. And then because of that, I had a couple of other friends and colleagues that, you know, were starting into primary care, and we grew from one clinic and all the way to 25 clinics before I left. And in between, we had a few more ventures. We had another electronic medical record company, which we exited to a Hong Kong listed company. And then furthermore, after that, I was also looking at healthcare analytics, and that's why I was in another company doing metabolomics, and that was just started. And I was also in Berlin, starting another company doing teleradiology. And so the scale just got, you know, incrementally bigger as I followed my curiosity. And I enjoyed it. I probably was too busy to realize the complexity, and the scale was just getting larger. And that around that time, that's when I joined IHH, and I was at Gleneagles and became CEO there after a period of 6 years. And then I moved to Thomson in the last 14 months to take on the role as group CEO there. Wow. with more complexity. Yeah. But I've always found the work challenging, but immensely satisfying and fulfilling. And that keeps me going. I think how you manage that is that you need to really find out what drives you. And I realized that even if I didn't have that job, I probably will still be doing what I'm doing within the healthcare space. And I'm a huge evangelist for, you know, good, well thought out healthcare systems. And I realized that, you know, I would probably continue with what I was doing anyway. So it became a very natural extension of my own interests and passions. Yeah.
And with that wealth of being in executive positions, in leadership positions, is there anything you miss from your medical practitioner days?
I think until recently, because, you know, if you are CEO of a hospital, you still touch the ground quite a bit. You talk to your doctors every day. You probably have breakfast with them, and then you meet the nurses, and you actually talk to patients, and you know, you have the ones that are happy and the ones that are not so happy. And a lot of it is based on clinical issues. So generally, you still use your clinical acumen and your knowledge quite on a daily basis. Currently, in my current role as more of a portfolio manager, I'm a little bit more far removed. And what I miss is the, funny enough, is probably the hustle and bustle and the complexity and the complaints and the feedback and the constant barrage of issues, actually, that come from the ground. Sometimes very seemingly unimportant, but, you know, friction nonetheless that you know that you need to fix. And some of those fixes are a little bit easier. At a more corporate portfolio level, I think it's a more financial role and more strategic role. You're a little bit more far removed, but the excitement that I get is from looking at things that scale. And the scale is actually very exciting as well, because then, you know, the impact that you have is much larger. I wish I could have my cake and eat it. Once in a while, I still get glimpses of, you know, operational issues that I need to step down to help and sort out. And that gives me a lot of some sort of, you know, familiarity and comfort as well. You know, it's like, oh, I'm back to dealing with hospital issues. Yeah. But yeah, I think it's a natural progression, and you know, and that's another chapter that I have to write. And so it's something that I embrace quite happily.
Yeah, it's always such a fine line between you know, hospital governance and management, and balancing the books as opposed to on the ground, you know, the clinical day-to-day grind of issues. Yes. So with that balancing act in mind, is that in itself a challenge for you?
It's a beautiful challenge, balancing business and commercial priorities with healthcare needs. I like healthcare business, and because it's hard to balance, right? There are things that I wish I could do that you can't. You can't, because if you ask a CEO of most companies what is, you know, what's at the top of their mind, and a lot of them will say, well, it's to maximize shareholder value, right?
Yeah.
And you ask a hospital CEO and he says, oh, what's on the top of my mind? Making sure that my patients come and leave better than the way they came in.
Absolutely.
So there's no other way to say it. You can't say anything else, right? Yeah. And at the back of your mind, you're thinking, you know, I still need to keep the ship going. I still need to make sure that we earn enough to, you know, continue to pay the nurses, buy the latest equipment, you know, keep tabs of what's the latest MRI or robots that are in the yeah. So you're having that at the back of your mind, but at the same time, you have all these constraints. If you were Grab, you could do things like price surge. You could do, if you were in the airline business, you might do price opacity and make, you know, buying tickets on Tuesday cheaper than buying tickets on Saturday. But you can't do that in healthcare. You can't have a price surge because there's high demand. You can't have price opacity because, you know, it just doesn't work. It doesn't, the industry doesn't demand of that, right? And you can't, you just can't be put in that position with your patients as well. So transparency is extremely important, you know, being open, you know, being able to put the ethical considerations is supremely important. And I think that fine balance is actually very difficult to achieve. And you get that in every industry in healthcare, every sector, from pharmaceuticals to devices to services. You know, you have to find that balance somehow. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a big skill set, I think. What advice would you have for, say, our audience where, you know, they may not conceptualize healthcare and healthcare industry to be a business model? And there's more and more of such an issue these days with increasing healthcare costs. I mean, those are your daily challenges. And there's so much currently on digital transformation, aging population, falling fertility rates. So those are the kind of challenges I guess you, with your strategic hat on, will have to kind of manage and problem solve. Is that something that drives you continuously with much excitement?
Yes.
Despite all the big global challenges?
Yes, of course. You know, I think we must not shy away from having open conversations about this. I mean, but there's a lot that we can do to increase access to healthcare. I give you an example. I mean, I actually work pretty closely with World Bank, with International Finance Corporation, and they are bodies that are, you know, looking for huge community impact, right? And they run vaccination programs for third world countries, and they write policies that only materialize or demonstrate their effectiveness 15 years into the making, right? And you know, if you could make tweaks to policy with the amount of, you know, you talked about digital transformation, the amount of data you have, you could leverage so much on access to healthcare. If I give you an example, can I success load treatments? If I know that the treatment will be 60% successful, how do I, you know, get those that are successful to pay more, right? I just don't know who are the 60 people that will be successful, but if I could, you know, get that policy through, then I could actually reduce the cost and either standardize the cost of the pre-treatment. And I could probably, you know, treat a larger proportion of people with the comfort that, you know, those that were not successful in the treatment would not be out of pocket any more than what we have advertised or given to them, or you know, put out before them. And those that are successful, you know, there will be the payers that would cover the cost. Mm-hmm. And in healthcare dynamics and economics, you know, this applies across both private and public institutions, because you are talking about population healthcare, right? So mm-hmm. you need to balance the books, whether you're a politician or you're running a smaller company, you still have to do that. So I think that I think I'm just trying to weave what you talk about data mm-hmm. and about digital transformation into mm-hmm. that governance part.
Yeah.
You do with the amount of information that we have now, we are possibly being led to make better decisions, or at least being able to solve for more complex problems.
Mm.
And, you know, almost, I dare say, have our cake and eat it as well. Mm. So I think the only way is to engage in this crucible of conversation with multiple parties, each of them putting forth, you know, their best case, each of them pushing their interests, which I think is absolutely fair. But at the same time, you know, being cognizant that there must be some give and take in order to get the best solution for all parties. Yeah.
Yeah, fascinating. And so tell me about your current projects, because I know Medical Thompson is not just based in Singapore. You have outlets in Vietnam and Malaysia.
Yeah.
Are there exciting topics coming up or projects?
I think the company is changing. I think I've joined in the last 13, 14 months, and I think the reason some of the early conversations I've had with the stakeholders is really that we're looking for growth and change to be a Southeast Asian healthcare company.
Mm.
So the way that we orientate ourselves and the way that we build our foundations is changing. We believe in hospitals and ambulatory care centers, and you know, building and right-sizing the type of intensity of work in the right type of centers for the right type of cost structure.
Mm.
But at the same time, you know, we are also pivoting into other areas that we think are of high value and increased need. Mm. We having a heritage of treating women and children in our Singapore flagship, we realized that, you know, we actually have an opportunity to be a standard bearer for reproductive medicine and fertility treatment.
Mm.
So, looking into those areas, not just in the form of services, but in technology.
Mm.
I think over the last decade, probably, we are seeing a lot of technology in cryopreservation, in metabolomics, understanding the embryo environment, in micro robotics. You know, we recently, last year, saw the first artificial insemination of sperm into egg via robotics. Mm. We're looking at how AI imaging is helping us select the best embryos for implantation for the best outcomes and success, and we are investing in those technologies. We are looking at microfluidics.
Wow.
And how that, you know, allows us to pick, you know, the best maybe sperm, you know, mm-hmm. that will have the highest chances of success in fertilization. And as lifestyles change, and as, you know, reproductive age, you know, increases, we actually see that, you know, there are changing and higher demands. And I think that is an area that we think that a lot of technology and a lot of knowledge is being poured out. And it's great as well, because it really helps us to understand how, I almost tell people, it's almost understanding the fingerprint of God, right? You're trying to understand how, you know, how we replicate, you know, at a very, very foundational level. And I think that's one of the areas.
Yeah.
The last part that we are driving is digital infrastructure. And I think most healthcare companies need to invest heavily in, you know, building their virtual space. I think most of our patients are demanding that.
Mm.
And it's not just an app, it's really understanding everything. I think I alluded from superficial level all the way to the data level.
Okay.
So a lot of work has to be done in understanding and building that part up as well. And
yeah.
I think I could go on forever, but I will leave it as these three main points. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And so, you know, you spoke about growth and personal development. If you were to time travel back, what would be the advice you give to your younger self?
I would have a lot of advice to give my 21-year-old self. But I think something that I think to be true is to tell myself that there are only two people you need to impress. The 8-year-old version of yourself and the 80-year-old version of yourself. And I think that helps me to remain true.
Okay. And if the audience were to reach out to you, where would they find you online?
They could probably look for me on LinkedIn, or just by searching Melvin Heng, and I guess we could include my email as well in the link somewhere.
Okay, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you, Lucy.